So you saved the economist for last. That's a brave bunch. Anyway, thanks. I'm going to go through and show you what I'm seeing in the economy. Hopefully, there's lots of time for Q&A that you guys, I suspect, have questions about. So we'll try to get to that as much as we can. So I'm just going to dive right in here and talk a little bit about what I'm seeing in the manufacturing sector. So first off, I'll start with this chart. I like to start with it because it really provides a nice summary of what manufacturers are thinking right now. And it really kind of gives that highlight over the last 14 months. So just as a reminder, if you are not used to seeing the Institute for Supply Management's charts, and does anyone fill out this survey? This is the Purchasing Managers Index survey. Okay, so if you're used to looking at this number, numbers over 50 means that the manufacturing sector is growing, and numbers under 50 means that the manufacturing sector is shrinking. So we look at the most recent data, and here's the bad news. The bad news is that the ISM PMI figure is under 50. It's been under 50 for 5 straight months. So that we just got that number. It comes out the first day of the month. So that was the bad news. That's the light blue line here. The good news, though, is you see a little bit of an uptick there in two of the lines, and those two are new orders and production, so dark blue and orange. So if you're a glass half full guy, like I try to be most of the time, you actually saw a pickup in both new orders and production in the February data. So at least it gives you a little bit of a sign of encouragement, even though in general overall sentiment is down. So I'm going to back up a second and talk about how we got to where we are right now. Okay. So the first thing is to notice where we were at this point last year. And in general, even coming into to January of 2015, let's go back to the second half of 2014. And when we went out and talked to many of our members, manufacturers were really optimistic coming into 2015. I mean, exceedingly optimistic. And you'll see that coming up in a chart that I have in a second. So much so that there was finally a sense that we're getting some traction in the economy, and maybe 2015 would have been the first year in 10 years we would have had 3% GDP. Do you remember that whole conversation kind of around December of 2014? And as you can see here, that didn't materialize, right? Instead, what we've seen happen is a deceleration in activity, and really by the time we got to the end of 2015, manufacturers were really, I don't want to use the R word, but definitely challenged, okay? The R word is recession, just in case. I was just throwing it out there. So what happened? Well, there's three basic headwinds that I'll kind of throw out there. And the biggest challenge is that those same headwinds are still continuing today. Number one is the dollar. Okay, so the dollar has appreciated roughly 22-23% since June 2014. So that's kind of has a lot of volatility depending on what happens to the Fed or the ECB or all that kind of fun stuff. But the bottom line is at least 20% hit. If you're a manufacturer selling abroad in Canada or Europe, wherever, it's a pretty big, significant hit that you can now be undercut on price when you're selling abroad. So from an export perspective, that's a pretty major hit. And for many of our members that have an international presence, when they have to report those earnings back on their earnings reports in dollars, they also take the hit there as well. So that dollar headwind is a pretty major one. The second one is just simply the global economy in general. I mean, it's kind of hard to believe, but the U.S. is actually one of the brighter spots in the world, right? So that kind of puts it a little bit into perspective. And, certainly many of our largest trading partners, I know that the Prime Minister of Canada is visiting Obama today. Canada has not had a fabulous year, folks, and we've seen their economy certainly throw out their last Prime Minister. But a large part of that conversation is about oil and the price of energy. So that's the third risk as well. And so, you really combined the fact that we have really a rough global environment, a strong dollar. Those two elements alone subtracted 6% from manufactured goods exports last year, so a very tough export environment. And then you add to it the whole energy piece. Energy, actually, the price of oil is up today, amazingly. It's up to about $38 a barrel, so I guess we'll see that in our gasoline prices soon. But even with that that increase, gasoline prices are down 65% from where they were a year and a half ago. And so what I like to say is that a large part of the manufacturing renaissance that we've seen since the recession ended, a lot of that really had to do with energy and the ramping up of additional energy production, certainly big here in Texas, but also Oklahoma, all the way up to North Dakota, and even in the Midwest and Pennsylvania and Ohio. And so a large part of that renaissance came from energy and the ramping up of energy. And we've seen a little bit of that pull back now with lower energy prices. And so even if you're not an energy producer, a lot of suppliers really have been affected by that. So with that said, you do sometimes hear the phrase, the R word mentioned about manufacturing. That's not my sense. But part of the belief there is that this number is below 50 for five straight months. And so there's that sentiment feeling that out there that, again, at least my view is manufacturing is challenged. But you do occasionally hear commentators who throw that phrase around. And I'll show you in a second the other reason why I think that word is used. This is manufacturing production. We're going to be getting new manufacturing production numbers next week for February. But you get a real sense when you're looking at the month-to-month data of just how soft overall manufacturing production numbers have been over the last few months. We had a nice spike in January. We're going to be looking for an additional positive number, hopefully, for February. That would be my expectation. But look at the 5 months before that. Four of those 5 months, you saw contracting levels of activity. And so that, again, softness coming into this year. This kind of tells it kind of on a year-over-year basis, so looking at the last 12 months, what's happened to manufacturing production. And if you look at January of last year, manufacturing production was up 4.3%. So that's actually a pretty good number. We would like to get back to 4%, right? In the January numbers for this year, it was 1.25. Now, that was an improvement from the 0.7 in December, but still very soft demand overall. Now, notice the light blue line here, which is industrial production. The other reason why I think oftentimes you hear the R word mentioned with manufacturing is that people assume manufacturing and industry are the same thing. Industrial production, a large part of industrial production is manufacturing, but the other two elements are really what's pulling that figure down. Number one, mining, right? Energy production is way down. And in fact, mining production was down 11% last year, again. This is the effect of lower oil prices and all of that like. The other part of that element is utilities, and utility production also was down, particularly in December, because we've had, it's kind of hard to believe, but a relatively mild winter this year, and so as a result, utility production was down. So that's really what's pulling this number far down into negative territory. It's hard for me to say that manufacturing is in a recession when we're still seeing positive numbers on year-over-year growth, and as I'll show you in a second, still positive expectations about the future, although clearly not anywhere where we'd like to see that happen. Now, the other thing I want to show you is we kind of paint this broad brush with manufacturing, but the reality is that it's a very mixed bag. There are sectors that are doing really well, and there are sectors that are really hurting. And some of these sectors clearly are in a recession, but others are clearly not. Now, the big elephant in the room here, so I'll throw it here right at you right away. Petroleum and coal products is over here on the blue side. That is refining. It's not extraction. So keep in mind, this is manufacturing production. It's not industrial production. So if I were talking about petroleum from a mining sense, I already gave you that number. It was down 11%. The energy sector clearly is in a recession. And if you go down to Houston, you see a lot of talk about layoffs and cutting back and all of the like. So clearly that is an area that is hurting. But some other areas that are hurting, primary metals. So certainly the steel and aluminum folks, if you were to talk to them, they're being hit by a number of different factors. Number one, excess supply coming out of China, lower commodity prices in general. And then, of course, then the energy pullback. A lot of metals went into energy, and so they're really being hit pretty hard. Coming on down the list here, you have machinery, fabricated metal products. A lot of that is those dollar headwinds. So that's the bad side. On the good side, though, you're seeing a lot of strength, and you'll see this in a chart I have a little bit later. Auto sales. Last year was the best auto sales we've had since the end of the recession. Continued strong demand this year. So if you're an auto supplier or in the supply chain for autos, a pretty good year for you. Also, you see a lot of other sectors up here, food, furniture, you know, home building, which you guys like. Housing is a bright spot right now, and so you're seeing a lot of strength on that side as well. So it's a much more mixed bag, I think, than folks kind of see it when you kind of paint it with a broad brush. So we released a survey. We actually did this on Wednesday, so you might have seen me on CNBC on Wednesday talking about this. So once a quarter, we go out and we ask our members, you know, what are you thinking about manufacturing right now? So the good news is that 56.6% of our members were positive about their own company's outlook when we surveyed them in the last 2 weeks of February. So that's good. So at least it's at least positive, right? There's more positive than negative. However, you notice that that was the fifth straight quarter where that number has fallen. So we've seen the outlook figure, much like that first chart that I showed you, the outlook figure has fallen with each successive quarter. A little asterisk next to that is I gave you when we surveyed people, right? The last 2 weeks of February. The first week of February that we surveyed, so it was around Valentine's Day, right? Just coincidentally there. The stock market was falling, right? Half of the responses came in on that very first day. People were not overly happy around that time. So I'm not saying that that was all of what's happening. Clearly, there's a trend downward here. But I think a lot of the responses we got clearly are indicative of a very rough February in the overall markets. Since then, we actually have had some decent figures, and so it might have changed. Like if we were to do the survey today, it might be a completely different story or somewhat better story than here. But you definitely are seeing a deceleration. For the last three quarters here, we've been below the historic average, which is roughly 73.5. And so the bottom line to that is when we ask manufacturers about what they expect with sales, production, et cetera, over the next 12 months, it's pretty clear manufacturers are pulling back, right? They're pulling back in terms of hiring. Look at hiring, capital spending, both turned negative in this survey. Again, you're worried about the economy. You're seeing a lot of bad signs in the global markets places, particularly in your stock market portfolio earlier this year. You're pulling back. You're a little worried. Export sales also pulled back in a very strong way, expected to decline 0.6% over the next 12 months. And sales, while they're positive at 0.4, they're a far cry away from the 4% that we had at this time last year. So again, we have a very anxious I'm not giving you good news here, am I? Sorry. But a very anxious community right now as far as the manufacturing sector is concerned. And so that's certainly a troubling sign. The other thing to kind of point out is, you know, we ask our members, what are some of your top challenges? I'm sure some of these are your challenges as well. Somewhat surprising me this time is the number one issue was health costs. It leapfrogged from number two to number one. Our members say when we ask what are your expected health care costs going to be over the next 12 months, the average increase was 7.6%, right? So if you're a small and medium-sized member, it actually was larger than that, closer to 9. If you're a large manufacturer, it was closer to 5 or 6. But still, the average was 7.6. So that's a pretty significant hit. And this has really been towards the top of the list, really, for the last 2 or 3 years. This year, this particular quarter, it jumped to be the number one concern. The number two issue here, which is very closely behind it, is the whole conversation about taxes and regulation. So certainly many of our members are looking for tax reform, obviously given that in the U.S. we have the highest tax rates in the world. At the National Association of Manufacturers, we push for comprehensive tax reform, given that 90% of our members are not C corporations. I suspect many of you are also not C corporations, and you pay taxes as an S corp or an LLC. And so we've been pushing for much more of a broader-based level of tax reform. On the tax front, I will say this. We did have a win of sorts last year, which is certainly something we didn't expect on the tax front. At the 11th hour, again, we got tax extenders passed for a couple years, and actually the R&D tax credit was made permanent. Again, some kind of surprising developments, I think, on the policy front for taxes. The longer-term goal is tax reform, but that was certainly a win. And on the regulatory side, is just simply a pushback against what we expect to be a very aggressive year from the last year of the Obama administration on the environmental and labor market, labor front. Which brings us to the Federal Reserve. So kind of giving you this nice overview of what's happening in manufacturing. So before I get to this chart, which you can obviously read the numbers, let's back up a second and talk a little bit about what the Fed was going to do versus what they will do next week. So the Fed is meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday of this next week, and they will do nothing. So I'm telling you this offhand. They don't even have to meet, right? So, but that's not where they were. So if you go back to around October, November, December of last year, the Fed, as you remember, raised short-term interest rates 25 basis points or a quarter of a percentage point in December, recognizing that there was progress in the economy and recognizing that, you know, you can't have 0% interest rates forever, right? And so after 7 years, they finally bumped up interest rates in December. And then we had a very rocky beginning of the year. The stock market went into correction territory, lots of worry about China. Is China going to send us into a global recession? Brazil's moving in the wrong direction. A lot of bad economic numbers. And so the Fed had come into this year with an expectation that they're going to raise rates four times this year. And just for simplicity's sake, let's just say that was March, June, September, and December. Each of those by 25 basis points. So you would have raised interest rates by 1 percentage point by the end of the year. That was pretty explicitly stated if you were looking at their communications. And yet here we are, they're going to meet this next week, and they're not going to raise rates. So why is that the case? Well, our members up here, you see 70% of them said to the Fed, don't raise rates, right? This is up from 55% in December, and I think for a large part, that is simply manufacturers saying to the Fed, look, you say you're data dependent, you want to see progress in the economy, we still are hurting back here, let's wait till we see better data in the economy before you start raising rates. And I think that's a large part of what's happening here. The other big part of what the manufacturers are responding to is just simply a recognition that those dollar headwinds are pretty significant, and obviously higher rates are going to impact that. But the Fed is not going to raise rates, and so I think what you're going to be looking for this next week is how do they communicate that they're not raising rates, and what signals do they send about the next two meetings? The April meeting and the June meeting are on the table, and my suspicion is that they'll raise rates in June. And so, again, looking for additional progress between now and then. The Fed will raise rates probably just two times this year, but it could be three. But again, they're going to be looking for data along these lines. But as you can see, manufacturers are somewhat nervous about that. So I'm just throwing that out there. You might have more questions about it, but that's where I'll leave it for right now. And I can answer questions about negative interest rates in the Q&A if you have a question about that, because that keeps coming up. So let's talk about employment. So on the employment side, these are actually somewhat curious numbers on the employment side, because certainly manufacturing hiring has been really soft over the last year. So just looking at the red lines up on this chart, notice that they're not quite as positive, right? So last year, manufacturers only added 26,000 jobs nationally. That's a very soft pace. Just to kind of put that in perspective, in the second half of 2014, manufacturers added roughly 20,000 per month. We would like to see anywhere from 12,000 to 20,000 per month, kind of in a healthy economy. And that's where we were coming into 2015. But that softer demand, softer overall production, you saw very soft hiring in 2015. And so far this year, we've seen kind of curious numbers. The January number was up 23,000. My sense is that that was not a real number. That these are seasonally adjusted numbers, and I think that there was a bit of a seasonal adjustment factor there. We had a fairly warm beginning of January. The end of January, I live in D.C., we had 2 feet of snow, not so warm. But I think it depends on when they did the survey. I suspect there was a seasonal factor at play there, and it corrected itself out in February. So you had plus 23, minus 16. The net was a positive 7. So, again, very soft hiring overall. So I want to juxtapose the soft hiring, and certainly the other survey I showed you where hiring is being pulled back, with another data point that comes out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics with my favorite acronym in Washington, which is JOLTS, the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey. We're going to be getting a new one next week. And in December, the JOLTS data were at an all-time high for manufacturers. Okay, so kind of juxtapose that for a second. You have very soft hiring, and yet job postings for manufacturers are at an all-time high, right? Now, part of that could be a seasonal factor, but it also, I'm going to try to spin that in a positive way, kind of like, again, glass half full, that manufacturers are priming themselves so that when demand does pick up and production picks up, they have a pipeline of employees ready. And so hopefully that is a nice sign that at least moving forward, we could see some additional pickups in hiring, again, down the line, although certainly not yet. The other big trend is that while manufacturing employment has certainly been soft, the rest of the economy has not. So this is where I start cheering you up, right? So yes, manufacturing has been soft, but we actually have seen really strong numbers for construction. Construction employment was very strong last year. The service side has been relatively strong. And so I didn't show it to you, but the non-farm numbers on that previous chart were actually pretty good. So we had 242,000 jobs created in February. I look for that number to continue to stay over the 200,000 mark as we move into March and beyond. So in general, we're seeing some strength for the rest of the economy outside of manufacturing. And as a result, the unemployment rate actually is 4.9%. And the participation rate picked up for two straight months, because everyone always says The participation rate's at a 30-year low, but we actually have seen some progress, and people are actually coming back into the labor market here in the last couple months, and that's obviously a nice sign. With that said, I'm going to put a huge asterisk after the 4.9 and say that the real unemployment rate, so if you were to add in underemployed, discouraged workers, people who are part-time working for economic reasons, the real unemployment rate, which is affectionately called U6, if you're looking at the data off the BLS website, is 9.7. So it's actually twice this number. Now, the good news is that's lower than the 17.1, which is its peak during the recession. But still, there's an awful lot of people out there who want a job that don't have it or they're underemployed. And so even though we're at 4.9, no one is saying that that's a great number. I'm just throwing that out there. Now, going through the course of this year, look for the unemployment rate to fall to 4.6 by the end of the year. So we'll be approaching closer to what we economists would probably have called full employment. But again, I think that means probably a little bit less than it did, say, 10, 15 years ago. But anyway, that's a nice trend nonetheless. In manufacturing, where have the jobs come from over the last year? This is the chart. If you don't see a sector, it's because it's negative, and I would make it too long, but also depress you. So this is only looking at the sectors that are growing. At the top of the list is transportation equipment. That's autos. I meant, again, that bright spot from autos. It's aircraft. You see food did really well last year. This is very similar to the other chart that I showed you early on. You can see a lot of other, certainly furniture. You clearly get a sense that certainly something that helps the hardwood folks. Because construction is coming back, because residential is a bright spot in general, you're seeing some strength there. The other thing to kind of point out is chemicals is up here on the list. This is a number that used to be solidly negative. But because of shale, because of all of the additional investments that are coming, that number is positive and expected to grow substantially over the next couple of years. So what does that mean? The bottom line is that my forecast for this year is roughly in the low twos, which is unfortunately the new normal, right, of where we've been the last few years. Last year we grew 2.4, which was the same as we were the year before that. We're going to be getting new data for GDP for the first quarter in April, but my forecast for that is 1.5. Now, I actually have upped that number a little bit over the last couple weeks, and if we continue to get some stronger data on retail sales and some other numbers, that number could move a little higher. So I actually see some upside potential for the first quarter. So I'm going to back up, and I'm going to remind you of your econ class for a second. How many of you loved econ? So in Econ 101, I used to teach econ, as was mentioned. GDP is C plus I plus G plus X minus M. Remember that fun formula? Some of you do, some of you don't. Some of you just blocked it out of your brain. So C is consumer spending. 70% of GDP is consumer spending. And in the fourth quarter, which was only 1%, the C was the only part of GDP that was a positive contributor. In other words, consumer spending is the only thing propping up the economy right now. Now, that's the positive side. The bad side is that, and you'll see this a little bit later, I also get a sense that the consumer is holding back from even stronger spending. That there's those anxieties out there. We didn't have the best holiday season, certainly, and I think there's still some weakness out there. But in general, consumer spending was a positive, roughly 3 to 4% growth in consumer spending last year. Fourth quarter was no exception to that. But that means the rest of that formula was all negative, right? Investment was solidly negative in the fourth quarter. Reduced spending on equipment, reduced spending on structures. Inventory spending was relatively weak. The one bright spot was residential on the investment side. So that was that number. Net exports have been a drag for much of the last year, as I mentioned. Again, those dollar headwinds have been pretty significant. And government is a perennial drag. That's kind of my joke, but although it's a little bit more mixed than that. But so you have that formula out there, and in general, moving into this quarter, I think that you'll see a little bit better data on the investment side, and hopefully net exports can become a little bit less of a drag, and that's what gets us to essentially the 2% for the year. But again, we'll be watching over the next few months to see where that goes. I'm putting this in here just as a bit of a lifter, pick-me-upper, right? Because I'm an economist. I have nothing better to do than do regressions, right? That's a joke, again. But when I inherited this survey in 2011 when I joined the NAM, I'm like 56.6% of our members are positive. What does that mean? Is that a good number? Is that a bad number? And so I started playing around with it, and I did a regression where I tried to forecast that number. What does that mean relative to manufacturing production over the next two quarters? And so this regression actually has a pretty good track record, as you can see, with both the red line follows the blue line pretty well. And it's predicting that manufacturing production will grow roughly 1% over the next two quarters. And that's roughly what our forecast for this year for manufacturing production is, kind of in that 1 to 1.5 range. So hopefully that proves fortuitous, and we have a pickup in activity over the next couple quarters. So I know this is titled Challenges. You probably thought the rest of the whole presentation was challenges. We'll do this really quickly because I want to get to positive stuff and I want to get to Q&A. So we asked our members on the survey that came out this week, how much has the global slowdown affected your business? 61.5% of them said that they had a negative impact on their sales. Again, those issues that I discussed earlier. I won't go through every country here, I promise. But I do a Monday economic report. If you would like to get my Monday economic report, give me your card. I'll get it to you. But for those people who get the Monday report, they also get a global report monthly, which actually came out yesterday. And this is the dashboard that I look at when I'm writing the global report. And the reason I do this is who buys our products, right? This is the top 10, actually top 15, I widened it this year to 15, top 15 markets for U.S. manufactured products in order. So if you're ever asked what the top 15 are, this is from 2015. Obviously, everyone knows Canada and Mexico are our two largest trading partners, but here's the rest of the list. So the quick summary of this is it works like the first chart. Numbers over 50 means that the manufacturing sector in that country is growing and it's blue. Numbers under 50 means that the manufacturing sector in that country is shrinking or contracting and it's red. And numbers that are black means that it's not growing or shrinking. It's basically stagnant. And I say the black because global manufacturing PMI is exactly 50 in February. So what does that mean? The manufacturing sector globally was stagnant in February. It wasn't growing, it wasn't shrinking, and a large part, you know, really is somewhat indicative, I suspect, of what you would expect as a trend. The other challenge here is that those countries that are red, almost every one of them was red for all of last year. This is for February. When I do the same graph for March, I would expect that those same countries will still be red. So the challenge here is that you have a lot of countries that are really struggling now. Canada is a story almost entirely about energy and about it's primarily Alberta and British Columbia. You get outside of that region, you're seeing modest growth. China, I'm sure I'll get Q&A about China. China continues to shrink. It's not anywhere near recession, but it's going to continue to decelerate and get slower. And so look for some surprise moves coming out of China to continue to try to prop up their economy. The other challenge country that I'll talk about is Brazil. Brazil is our 11th largest trading partner in 2015. They were our 8th largest trading partner in 2014. So this tells you how bad things are in Brazil right now. I actually made a paint Europe with a happy face here because I actually don't think that Europe needed to do what they did yesterday, which was push us into negative interest rates. I actually see Europe moving in the right direction generally. There's some challenges there, but they actually are growing. They're not immune to the global challenges, but I actually have seen numbers moving a little bit better there. So this is the dollar. This is the dollar story. So this is the 23% appreciation that I mentioned to you earlier. This is updated every Monday, so we'll get a new update for this week from the Federal Reserve. But again, you see that pretty steep appreciation. I don't see the dollar appreciating a lot above this, but still staying in that range where it is right now. So this is going to, again, continue to present a problem for manufacturers as they export. The other one, as I said to you earlier, I could put consumer spending as a bright spot, but I'm putting it here as a challenge because of what I mentioned to you earlier, kind of just threw out there, that I get a sense that consumers are holding back a little bit. And these numbers somewhat tell that story. So this is consumer confidence. It's also small business confidence, just to kind of keep it all together. And almost all of these numbers peaked at this time last year. So the consumer confidence surveys, there's two of them, one from University of Michigan, one from Conference Board, both had a post-recessionary high in January of last year. The NFIB survey for small business owners, it was December of 2014. And then the numbers have been downhill since then. So you have essentially a very anxious consumer, very anxious small business leader. And so, yes, they recognize that there's been progress in the economy over the last few years, but there's nervousness there. And I think that they're holding back on spending as a result of that. So on the strength side, I already mentioned this one too. This one is the auto sales figure. Again, really strong last year, and I would expect that we'll continue to see a lot of strength coming in 2016 on this front. 17.3 was the average for the year as a whole, but you can see that we actually surpassed 18 million units for a while there at the end of the year. So a lot of strength in auto sales. The average age of a vehicle on the road is still 11 years old, so there's still a high replacement contingency out there that's trying to replace their cars. So this one also is one of those that I put in the strengths, but it really is kind of more mixed than that. So this is the housing numbers, which of course you all care about. And so this is a very volatile, messy chart, and it's messy for one reason. It's messy primarily because of the multifamily segment. So when you're looking at housing starts, there's multifamily, there's single family. The single family, at least in my view, is a little bit better gauge. But housing is one of those things where you often take two steps forward and one step back. So it's kind of hard sometimes to get the fuller picture without looking at the long-run trend. But housing permits in January, January. Housing permits in January were at roughly 1.2 million level, right? 1.2 annualized units. That was the second straight month that was over 1.2 million. I'm looking when we get new data next week for February for that number to stay over 1.2. The reason why I'm looking at permits is this is a measure of future activity. If you're getting a permit, you're going to be doing construction down the line. Starts were down for the last 2 months, but I think starts were down primarily because of those weather factors. Again, I live in D.C. If you have 2 feet of snow on the ground, you can't build a house, right? So I think that there was a little bit of a pullback depending on when they did the survey. I would look for some improvement in the February and March data, hopefully getting us back to that 1.2 level. For the year as a whole, I would say that we're going to continue to make progress to the 1.25 to 1.3 range for housing starts. So that's, again, slow but steady progress, nowhere near the 2.1 million we were making pre-recession, but we should have never been making that many houses anyway. We're going to slowly but surely make some progress on that front. And so that's obviously a nice positive sign. Home builder sentiment also is relatively strong, although it also has pulled back a little bit, but I would still expect it to remain positive moving forward. So this is the residential side, and as I said, residential was actually a bright spot in the GDP numbers. On the non-residential side, a little bit more of a mixed picture from industry to industry, but for manufacturing, this is this nice spike here for manufacturing production. We actually had an all-time high for manufacturing construction. I think that was July of last year. It's kind of pulled back a little bit from that. But can someone tell me why the spike? What do you think is the spike in manufacturing construction last year? I already gave you a hint when I was talking about the employment numbers, one sector. Chemicals. So this is all foreign direct investment coming from Europe and from Asia, building facilities in the U.S. because of natural gas being so much cheaper here, and then they're going to take that product and ship it back, right? That construction is starting to happen. It's going to continue to happen in 2016, and so I would look for continued growth on the employment and export side from that sector moving forward. But the bulk of this increase is chemicals, which really shows you kind of a complete dichotomy, I think, from some other numbers that you see out there. And I'll leave you with this one, again, kind of on that Fed side. So the negative part of lower energy prices is obviously the negative side you're seeing in the energy sector and the supply chain. The positive side is that, you know, before I left Alexandria, I think I was paying $1.67 a gallon. I don't know what you're paying where you are. Maybe it's less or more than that. But still, it's a good number, right? So the good side is that we're spending a lot less on gasoline, and pricing pressures in general have been held down because of lower energy prices. And so as a result, this is the producer price index. Notice the producer price index was in negative territory all of last year on a year-over-year basis. It is a year-over-year number, so it's going to start moving positive. But in general, you've seen pricing pressures being held down by lower energy. And when you strip out food and energy, you still are having relatively modest inflation. Now, this is the producer price index. The consumer price index actually shows a little bit more inflation than that, and it actually is showing it closer to the 2 range. But in general, pricing pressures have not been much of an issue, although I suspect we'll drift over 2% this year. So how's that for a lot of charts? So I can dig deeper into any of these, but I also can talk about any policy issues that you might have at the NAM or whatever else. So what questions do you have for me? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, I think that the dollar might strengthen a little bit. I don't see it strengthening a lot more above where it was. My sense, so that's assuming everything happens as you just outlined it. I think for the most part, I don't think the European Central Bank needed to do what it did. To be honest with you, they in general are making progress. The Europeans are worried about deflation. I'm not sure that's an issue for them. They essentially have energy issues just like we do. But the biggest challenges for Europe, at least in my view, are, number one, they have the huge Syrian refugee crisis, which is big, right? And suddenly absorbing another million people, it's going to have a huge economic impact for them, especially on those countries that are taking the immigrants, and that's primarily Germany. And you've seen Merkel's popularity drop pretty significantly because of that. So that's one challenge. The other kind of more short-term challenge that I see for Europe is the whole Brexit issue. And if you don't know what Brexit means, it's, you know, Britain, the UK, is going to vote in June on whether to leave the euro or not. Those polls are a lot closer than people would expect for that to happen. Again, there's a huge anti-immigrant wave there, a huge populist wave. They don't like the European Union. They don't like the regulations coming out of the European Union. And so it could pass, but I don't think it will. But leading up to that, there's going to be a lot of worry. If Britain leaves the euro, what happens to the European Union? They're not in the euro, but in the European Union. And if Britain leaves, other countries might leave as well. The other ripple effect of that is if the UK votes to leave the European Union, Scotland will now vote to leave the UK again. So you have a whole set of dominoes that could fall from that, which is probably why I don't think it will happen. But in general, we're seeing some numbers coming out of Europe which are decent, right? 1.6% growth. Again, nothing to write home about, but that's a much better story than what we had a year ago. The unemployment rate is down to 10.4%, I think, or 10.3%. That's, believe it or not, progress for Europe. So that, I think, is going to continue going on. You were right about China. I think that China will continue to devalue their currency. They're going to try to throw the kitchen sink at trying to stimulate their economy, because it's doing a lot worse than advertised. And so they are going to do those moves. And so that perhaps could strengthen the dollar a little bit. Let me talk a little bit about negative interest rates, because I kind of threw that out there. Because I think I was asked on the Wall Street Journal survey, or one of the surveys I filled out this week, what is the probability of negative interest rates in the U.S. in 2016 and 2017? And I put zero for both answers, right? I don't think that the U.S. will ever do negative interest rates. I think we're going to get a huge lesson in what not to do by the countries that are suddenly adopting it. I think for the one thing, you know, the whole reason to do negative interest rates is to try to stimulate the economy. Keep in mind, as a depositor, you would never get negative interest rates. This is primarily banks who are borrowing from the central bank. They would have to pay, in the European case, 0.4%, right? So you would have to pay that to put your money and park your money with the bank. And the whole goal is to be able to not put your money in a bank and get it flowing out there, right? Increase the velocity of money, to use that nice economic phrase. So that's the purpose. And the other purpose is to push down the price of the euro, which didn't work yesterday, notice. But the challenge there is that I'm not sure that you're going to have the positive impacts from banks that you think you are, because banks, keep in mind, take your money and they lend it out, right? They can't pass on negative interest rates to the people who are borrowing money. And so they get squeezed on their profit margins. So banks in Europe right now are not doing that great, right? And so it's kind of hard to argue that they're going to be lending out more money when they aren't, right? The other part of it, and this is kind of more the psychological piece, so I'm going to be a little bit more of an exaggerated here, and to say that if you're doing negative interest rates, you're saying implicitly, things are so bad in our country right now that we have to do negative interest rates. And that has a psychological impact. If you say things are bad, things are bad, right? People will react to that. And so I just don't think that that's something we would ever go to. More than likely in the U.S., what we would do is we would do additional quantitative easing, which would have similar effects, whether that's controversial again, but I think we would probably do that again before we would do negative interest rates. So he asked what the new norm for housing is. If you look at housing formation rates, household formation rates, we're going to settle off probably in the 1.4 to 1.5 million range several years from now. Again, making slow but steady progress up to that number. So if we get to 1.4 million housing starts or maybe even 1.5, that's probably it. Again, we should have never been making 2.1, and because we did make 2.1, that's part of what's allowed this process to drag out a little bit longer. The other challenge that's out there is it's just much harder to get a mortgage today than it was. And because we've had such sluggish economic growth, household formation has not been what we would think. When I say the word household formation, I guess the easiest layman's way to say that is you have a lot of millennials that got a job. They got out of college, have this great degree, but can't find a job. So they moved in with their parents in their parents' basement. And now maybe they moved into an apartment, but that whole process has stalled for a little slower than I think normally you would expect people to, you know, come out of college, get a job, get married, have kids, buy a house with a picket fence. You know, that is not happening as fast, I think, as you would normally see. And so that household formation has been a little slower this time. And you know, maybe it's the parents kicking the millennials out, but at some point that domino will fall. And I think that when it does, you'll see a huge spike in housing starts at that point. Well, you know, the question was about the U.S. debt, right? And so, you know, one of the biggest frustrations that I have as an economist and certainly someone who cares about what's happening in policy is that we've, for the most part, punted the whole discussion about the fiscal situation. So we have, you know, roughly $450 billion debt this year, and everyone's patting themselves on the back about how wonderful that number is. To me, that's still a bad number. It's better than a trillion-dollar debt that we had, a few years ago. But still, that's a bad number. The deficit is expected to go up to 550 this year, and then by the time you get to 2021, 2022, you're back over $1 trillion again. And the reason why is because we really have done nothing fundamentally to change the deficit situation. And a large part of why we had the reduction has to do with slightly a better economy, but also the sequestration issue, which is also quite controversial. And so I think, you know, as we move into the next presidential term, we have to fundamentally do something about entitlement reform, about our fiscal situation, and we've just continued to punt this situation along. By the time you get to 2020 and beyond, you're going to see interest on the national debt overtake defense and some other categories within the budget. And so as that happens, you're going to start seeing additional squeezing of other categories, which is not going to be a place we want to be. So this is definitely the crux, I think, of one of the bigger challenges that's out there. On the survey that I mentioned to you earlier, we had a question about the fiscal situation, and not shockingly, this is a really huge concern for manufacturers, particularly as they're looking more long-term. So I think one of the big, So the question was about the dividend people are getting from having lower gasoline. So, you know, if I'm paying $1.67, that means I'm saving, right, quite a bit of money from when filling my gas tank. You know, it was costing me $50, now it's costing me $25 to fill my tank, right? So what's happened to the other $25? I think one of the big paradoxes over the last year and a half is that there was a sense coming in, especially into the holiday season of 2014, that people were going to take that money and spend it, right? We're going to have a fantastic holiday season because everyone's going to spend that money and, you know, the multiplier and all those fun things. But the reality is it never quite worked out that way. We've seen some anecdotal evidence of maybe some additional spending here and there. The iPhone always seems to sell, the Fitbit, you know. Bars and restaurants are doing a little bit better, so people are certainly going out and spending some money there. and maybe some other isolated categories. But the other big thing that you've seen happen is the savings rate has picked up. And so I think, you know, go back to my consumer confidence number. The consumer is still relatively anxious. And so as a result, they're saving a little bit more of it than I think people would have expected. So you are seeing some positive spending elements from that, but not the wholesale across the board that I think a lot of economists might have expected. So I think that's again, I think the biggest question mark that's out there is what's holding the consumers back so much. And I think a lot of that is the economic uncertainty. Well, it can be. I think the big worry that would happen there is on the debt issue. So debt, we're going to quickly at some point approach $20 trillion in debt. I think we're roughly $18, $19 trillion right now. As long as other countries are willing to give us money, I guess that's not an issue. But I think the real worry that we have moving forward is at some point, what is the breaking point there where people no longer have full faith and credit in the U.S. to pay back its bills. And I'm not sure what number that is or what big catastrophe would have to happen for that to happen. But that's where you suddenly would start seeing the dollar devalue from that, and that's where you'd start having really big, significant recessionary or worse challenges coming from that. Again, we're not there now, primarily because the debt and deficit as a percentage of GDP has actually fallen. So that's obviously a positive, even though that number is still a scary number. But if that number starts rising significantly, I think that that could be a huge challenge for us. What other questions do you have? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the first question, and I'll get to the second question. The first question was, when will we ever see $3.90 a gallon gasoline again? I think it's going to be a long time, to be honest with you. I think, and that, you know, probably frustrates the folks on the energy side, but I think that, you know, we're suddenly settling off here at $40 a barrel or roughly below that. That has a lot to do with the fact that demand has picked up. I mean, people are traveling more because of cheaper gasoline, but you also are seeing supply pull back a little bit. So that's primarily what's leading to that. I think that we could get to $55 or $60 a barrel by 2017, right? At some point, maybe at the end of 2017 or 2018, you might get back to 70, maybe. But I think the days of $107.50 a barrel of gasoline, which is where we were in June 2014, it's going to be a long time before we get back to that. So yes, a long time is the answer to that. And the other big issue is obviously at some point China will pick up again. So that obviously is a huge demand driver for all commodities, including energy. And at some point, you know, I guess the big issue is fracking. Does it continue and that kind of stuff? On the Obamacare question, so I think the issue I think moving into the next presidency is there are a lot of things that need to be fixed in Obamacare. It's probably too late to repeal it. I think it's really just a matter at this point of replacing it with something or fixing it around the edges, and that will really hinge on, I guess, who the next president is, what the next Congress looks like. We were able to get a win again, much like the tax win we had. We were able to forestall the Cadillac tax, so-called Cadillac tax, until 2020. For those of you who don't know what that is, it is a tax on employee benefits. So manufacturers in general have really generous benefits, and by the time it's basically taxing really generous plans. So if you have a family plan, and they're looking not just at insurance, but other benefits as well, including your flexible spending account, including wellness centers, including all this other stuff. If you're paying an average of $27,500 per family, anything above that was taxed at 40%. That sounds like a big number, except for the fact that it's indexed to inflation, not healthcare inflation. And so that by the time you get to 2025, 2030, 2035, virtually every manufacturer is paying this tax, right? So there was a pushback on that, not just from the business community, but also from the labor union community, and that was pushed back by 2 years. But that was a hurdle in and of itself. You also had the medical tax, medical equipment tax, which was part of a deal we had. So slowly but surely, you're getting some parts of the Affordable Care Act either pushed back or fixed. But I think that there needs to be a more of a wholesale change there. I think, and certainly we'll get that probably in the next presidency in some fashion. Whether it's more generous or more of a pullback, I think will depend on who the president is. What other questions do you have? Did I depress you? I guess right here, you're heading out for your plane. So I will say this. Did I see a question? I will say this. I actually have seen some pretty good numbers in the last couple of weeks. So I actually, my mood tends to swing with the data. And as I said, I kind of upped my GDP forecast in the last week or so. So maybe we'll get some better data in the next week or so, which will make that story a little bit better. Yeah. So we don't lobby the Fed on monetary policy. However, we have often taken our executive committee of the board up to meet with Janet Yellen and the rest of the Board of Governors. I think that the Fed appreciates hearing from manufacturers, hearing what they're seeing that's out there. They are data dependent, right? So they definitely like to hear that part. As an economist, I meet with them more frequently than that. So actually, I saw her in February. But yes, they definitely are concerned and listen to what's happening. And especially since so many other pockets of the economy, you are seeing some movement in the right direction, but manufacturing still is not. I think that they're definitely concerned with that. Did you have your hand up here? Okay. What other questions do you have? Well, if you would like to get on my Monday report and you're not getting it, just give me your card and we'll make sure you get it this next week. And with that, I guess I will let you go. So. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Here, I'll give you
Thank you so much.